Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 421st episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Philip V and Scott Fitzloff. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow. Today we've got Tom Morris back on the podcast. Last time we had him on, he was enjoying an incredible hot streak. And ladies and germs, I'm excited to tell you that hot streak has not cooled. He has 7 jobs lined up in May. Not all of them are booked, but 5 of the 7 of them are essentially done deals. So we break it down. We talk about all of the different ways that he got these jobs, the different avenues, and we try and dissect what does a 7 shoot month look like? How does that come to be? How do you read the tea leaves and say, okay, this connection here, that connection there, a repeat client there, you know, sort of return business. How do you spin that reel into booking that much? Because, you know, for the people out there who don't work commercially or just starting out, Tom talks about it a little bit. Like, I think we all had early goals of like, oh, it would be so great if I shot X number of jobs a month. You know, 1 job, 2 job, 3 jobs would be incredible. 3 jobs a month. I don't know about you, Oren. That still feels like, that's awesome.
It might be a little too much. I actually even think, like, would you want to have 7 jobs in a month? Like, it's so stressful. You're just dropping the ball on like everything, right? I mean, in my mind, for like the way I work, I don't know that I can handle 7 jobs in a month.
I mean, the anxiety is twofold. It is you don't want the work to suffer, right? Because, you know, you're only as good as your last job. So you want your reel to be awesome. Like, why break your back working so hard to do these jobs? And when they're like not as strong as they could be, that's one anxiety. The other anxiety is like your reputation is at stake. If you burn a company because you don't have the bandwidth to like give the commitment that the job is expecting, you know, then you lose that opportunity. That company may not reach out to you ever again. And that is the bigger anxiety. I can think of times where like I have not done as thorough a job in some of the client services part. Like the job ultimately turned out really good and I'm really proud of the work. But, you know, you're like a deck could have looked better or stuff like that. And I regret it for sure. 100% I do. And that's part of the work, you know, the client services is part of it.
Yeah. But I do think what I've learned from Tom is like, that's our attitude. It's like, oh, we can't say no to anything because they'll never hire us again or, you know, but.
No. I'm saying you shouldn't say yes if you can't deliver. They'd rather you say no.
I guess what I've learned from Tom basically is that you can. Just don't worry about that. Like just literally every time you finish a job, email it to all the companies you've ever worked with. And so maybe you couldn't work with them or you even had a bad experience on something, but you're just reminding them that you exist and you might just be appropriate for the next job that just came up. So
100%.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously don't email them like every week, but every couple months reminding people you exist, I think is smart and that you're interested because a lot of times, you know, people don't know. I wanted to mention real quick, you know, our last episode was about scheduling and I had like 2 shoots intersect and I had to figure it out. And a lot of people texted me and said, dude, just accept both shoots and just see what happens. and some people, we have a listener that Adam Bricker, you know, that that is a very in demand.
Yeah,
cinematographer and director, shoots Hacks, he shoots Chef's Table.
Yeah,
he was like on his way to Europe when he was sending me this message. And like, if someone that's like at that level is like, hey, just say yes to everything until something books, then maybe that's just like the rest of our lives is just saying
that's
yes to everything.
I
did end up getting the Mexico City job. So I had to like back out of the airline job, and I'm still trying to kind of see if maybe they'll push the airline job.
That's the reality. It's like, you're like, does this work? Like, if it's, you know, talent gets the same, they're the other side of the coin of like, the director can't do it now. Can we push it a week? Let's make it work or whatever. You know, it's all just kind of people rearranging each other's schedules for each other. So
let's see. And I think, you know, we do get into the weeds a little bit with Tom on how each job came to be. So let us know what you think about episodes like this, kind of dissecting a period in a filmmaker's life. And, you know, I think the podcast has kind of evolved into being about two things. One is like, is this a sustainable career? How do you find longevity as a filmmaker? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is like just a real nuts and bolts, like how do you get a job, right?
Sure.
So hopefully we're answering that question at every level of your career, like entry level to like seasoned professional, like brand name filmmaker.
Yeah. Yeah. And that,
this is like an example episode where we're like, hey, you got seven jobs. Just tell us how you did it.
Well, and I think you and I are also versions of portraits of a filmmaking career, right? But the beauty of the podcast going for so long is that you can look at repeat guests, Carlin being the obvious first example, but Tom being another one, of people that you touch base with once every 6 months, once a year. Roxy, she's got a movie going to Tribeca this year, you know? And so...
She does?
Mm-hmm. She does indeed.
I just saw her at Target. My Silver Lake Target.
Shout out Roxy for both getting your movie into Tribeca and also not name dropping.
I think now that I think about it, she might have mentioned it.
Good.
So I'm a jerk for both.
Shine bright.
Cutting her Roxy and not remembering.
Yeah. But, you know, just as those are just off the top of our heads, like people who have been on the show, who have, we've seen their growth, we're seeing their trajectory. It's pretty awesome. It's pretty inspiring. So,
yeah, I mean, Tony Ascenda's the biggest rocket ship.
Tony,
I made a cool music video.
Yeah, yeah.
To number one dick joke TV director in LA. Yeah. Anyway, cool. Well, let's talk to Tom. But before we do, actually, sorry, I do want to remind people that they can support us if you find this even mildly amusing. I know we have a listener that has just recently contacted us on Instagram and said that everything that happened on our most recent episode is happening in his life. And I don't even know if he's a patron. But it seems like some people are relating to the podcast. So if you relate in any way, why don't you throw us a couple bucks a month, keep this thing going, help us pay our editor, and just let us know that you're listening. And you can do that at patreon.com/justshootitpod. And we would really appreciate it.
Just go to patreon.com/justshootitpod, throw us a couple bucks to keep this show going.
Okay, let's talk to the one and only Tom Morris.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend.
But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, here we are with Tom Morris.
Tom Morris.
Live to us. Where are you? Are you on set right now? What is that? It's hard to see you.
I am actually in my car. And as Oren knows and Matt's learning, and we talked about in the last podcast, I have the four kids and they've slowly taken over my entire two-bedroom apartment. So the hustle is real. As we are sharing pre-record, I'm sitting out front of this townhome I want to take over once they list it for rent. So
eyeballing it. Just going to go get it, buddy.
Wait, why don't you just buy it? Matt, so the reason we're doing this episode is because Tom has a lot of jobs in a row.
Literally, just for listeners, Tom, we had you on like late last year and you were on a hot streak. And literally, I remember it was like right around Christmas and I ran into a producer friend at a con. I never go out. And I was like, oh, I ran into like six people I knew at this concert. And one of them was a producer that literally was like, yeah, just listen to the podcast. We called Tom up and offered him another job.
No, literally off of listening to the podcast.
Not because of listening to the podcast, but okay. He did. Okay. Tom, he said it to you. It was like, you know, 7 1 month, make it 8, buddy, or whatever,
right.
Like the whatever tally you were on. And now here we are, the very end of April. It'll be May by the time this episode drops. You've got like literally 7 jobs in this month.
Tom was, we were talking about his availability and he sent me a list of 7 jobs, 5 which are booked, 2 which he's the reco on, which for those that don't know, that means that, you know, if there's 3 directors maybe in contention for a job,
he's the choice.
And he's the one that everyone's like, we should hire this director. He's like our recommendation and here's some backups just in case you don't like Tom for some reason.
Yeah.
But so, Oren, you had a pitch of just going down the list of all of the potential gigs and booked gigs that Tom has and using that as our cheat sheet for dissecting how a freelance commercial director books all sorts of different types of gigs.
Right. How they get jobs. And again, like, I don't want to not mention that I know so many directors, both freelance and roster directors right now, that have not pitched on anything all year. You know, that it's not like exactly there's unlimited amounts of jobs right now.
Yeah.
Right. And everyone's working a ton.
Yeah. Like
it's a little feast or famine. So the fact that you have 7 potential ones, I mean, 5 booked is pretty insane.
Pretty excellent. Pretty excellent.
Like you must be doing something right.
Yeah. People at home who are like, oh man, I would kill to have that many jobs. Get in line. But also we're going to pick Tom's brain because I think you do have some very actionable techniques that we can impart to the listeners. And hopefully I think things are kind of heating up. You know, I'm looking at 2 canaries in 2 different coal mines and they're happy and tweeting right now. They're chirping away. You guys are healthy.
We're tweeting.
You're the canaries. Yeah.
Not on Twitter. Yeah. I talked to a friend today who works with a very famous director. This friend was telling me that that director has like also 5 jobs over the next few weeks. And I was like, how does this director, like, you know, every job requires a day of casting, a day of scouting, a day of storyboarding, right? Like at minimum, that's 3 days. And if you have 10 days of work across like 5 different jobs, that's already, you know, 25 days of not being able to do anything but those 3 things plus the shoot. So I was like, how is it done? And my friend said that this director skips a lot of it, that this director has a team of people that go to auditions, that go to location scouts, that go do things.
When you say famous, I'm not asking you to name names, but like, is it an echelon of, are they famous for a commercial director or are they famous for a director? Are you saying it's Steven Spielberg, Michael Bay, Spike Jonze, level of notoriety, or is it
maybe like Spike Jonze and Steven Spielberg, someone that is famous for short form material?
Gotcha.
So, and it's not like one day shoots. It's like a 3 day shoot. It's like a 2 day shoot. It's like, it's not small clients and it's not small budgets. It's like, and I was like, how is that even possible? I cannot handle three, you know, like it's killing me.
I'm curious, like, is it something, cause that makes sense, right? Like a brand, a persona is something that is scalable. Steven Spielberg can't be everywhere, but if you can communicate a vision and an aesthetic that translates across all of the different media that you're making, then a team can't execute. And then you're spot checking and like they're checking in and they're saying, hey, here are our five favorite cast members or whatever it is. And you can kind of economize that way. And that makes a ton of sense. But you have to be a brand in order for a company to want to sign on to that in the first place. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I also think like some of these directors, like their teams are independent of the companies. Like, you know, like obviously we talked to Tom works with a lot of the same crew members a lot. Like I think some directors have a casting director that are like, hey, you're an amazing casting director. Show me three options for each role, you know, instead of 300 options, which is what like the three of us usually get to sort through.
Normally they give me 20 and then I'm like, can I see 300, please?
Right. Well, so Tom, you have, how many shoot days do you have in May? Like already scheduled? Probably around 10, right?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
9 shoot days. So that's a third of the month you're shooting.
Yeah.
How are you having time to do storyboards, casting, and location scouting? And not to mention, you know, calls and client calls and agency briefs and all that stuff. How do you squeeze that all in?
Well, it's just about to start.
We're gonna find out next month.
It's what I'm gonna find out right now. I mean, you know, it's interesting because as we talked about a little bit on the last podcast, first thing I did as like an attempt to be a filmmaker, a professional filmmaker, was make my first independent feature film. And that was, you know, 18 days of production, but I was also the best cheerleader on the team. And so we started the movie with not enough money. So after shooting all day, we would edit and then we would be putting together emails to present the emails to investors. And so I might wake up early and talk to the investors and say, hey, do you want to add a share or double up your investment? And so it was just like 25 days of mania by the time pre-production and making the DP and team shoot on the weekend. And so I remember when I got my first commercial and you have support between, you know, a line producer, a production manager, an executive producer, a coordinator, and then all of the departments are given the resources to do their job and kind of report back. I remember being like super bored, you know, like we would go location scout and like, that's the scout. And then everybody else would go do their work. And I would then, you know, especially on like a 30 or sometimes like if I get a collection of 15s, you know, you're doing storyboards, but it's like 6 frames. And then, you know, it's pretty quick. And then the storyboard artist refines it and cleans it and sends it back. And so I remember, I remember my first couple of commercials being extremely excited to get them, but wanting to be in like this busy beaver mentality of I need to do more. And then it's just like, but everybody has a job. And so, I mean, yeah, you know, my dream used to be, oh my gosh, what would it be like if I was able to somehow book one commercial a month? And so... last year was the first time I didn't book one per month. Last year I ended up on 18, which the first 5 months was like nothing. And then I think when we talked, I had a couple like three in a rows, and it just keeps me more energized. It's easy for my brain to be like, on Wednesday I'm going to storyboard, and because I'm storyboarding for Honey Baked Ham, I can use the same storyboard artist to also storyboard for Next Insurance. And then it's like this hour is for this job, that hour is for that job. And then I just do both of them back to back. And then it just, you know, it's a storyboard's responsibility then to like clean it up.
Tom, I think you do get stressed, but like you're pretty good at handling it. Like for me, I see every job, like it could be a talking head interview against the white wall. And I'll be like, oh my God, like what? How am I going to shoot this? Like, what's going to happen? I'll call 10 people and be like, is this funny? Like, is this, I have a lot of anxiety about every job, not in a bad way, in a like, how can I make this an orange shoot, you know, and not just do whatever the easiest is. And I think, you know, at a certain level, you maybe get the confidence to be like, well, just the fact that I'm shooting this makes this like an Orange shoot, you know?
My most loyal collaborative partner is my DP Brooks. And, you know, we're going on this journey together over the next month here. And we've been on the journey this year. And so much of those conversations just like happen naturally, you know? Again, with me and my overstuffed house, like I did a couple calls in the morning. My kids came back from a walk and I'm like, Brooks, I'm coming to your house. I'm doing 3 hours of calls. And he's just like, you know, working on stuff in the other room. And then he's like, as all three of the calls end, he's like, oh, we're shooting this way. And we're shooting that way. And while you were talking, I texted the guy that owns the MoCo rig in Chicago. And, you know, we could get this for this amount or whatever. And you're like, that was easy. He just like, he listened in like the AI would do. And then he would be able to report back with options.
You got a production bullpen of two people. It's brilliant. And the two most important people, you know, we were talking beforehand off mic about how, you know, Brooks is going to be shooting all of your pieces. And I don't know if we have made it clear, like you're all over the country. You know, you're flying all over. You're
LA, New York, Atlanta, Columbia.
So to that end, I was like, oh, the only way that you can pull off all of these jobs is if you have overlap between department heads. Right. And the DP being the main one. Right. Like that's beautiful because you can be flying together and talking about all three different jobs or four different or seven jobs or whatever is left. If you had to have a bunch of discrete calls with seven different cinematographers over the course of this month, your head would just be spinning.
Right now, I have the same producer on three things.
Oh, that's nice.
The most,
that's nice.
Because the scheduling of the meetings, like, I don't know how you're doing it, Tom. Like, I'm sure certain of your jobs are like, hey, Tom, we need you to get on a call tomorrow at 1 p.m. And you're like, well, I'm on set tomorrow at 1 p.m.
Yeah.
Like, so as long if you have somebody like at least helping manage your calendar a little bit, that's like probably.
Yeah.
I think that is the main thing. Yeah.
I think we'll talk about it too, but yeah, like the same way that, you know, when I'm looking for stuff or I'm like finishing stuff and I'm kind of like in constant outreach, I just take it upon myself to just like blatantly send people my times. And so it might be for the first thing that's prepping that I'm like, oh, I'm available from this time to this time, that time to that time. I'll just email it to the seven people. When I finish something up, I'm always kind of in contact with people, you know, whether it's like our friend Blake at Sawhorse. I love that guy. I'm always just like, he's someone I just kind of like text to and call to, you know. Other people I kind of communicate through email. Other people I communicate through Instagram. But I'm always doing like that kind of like general outreach and updating and letting people know where I am unsolicited. And so as I'm in this little pocket where several things are kind of booking at once, like the one that ended up awarding today for the last week of May, even though that company wasn't asking me anything, the last 2 weeks, I've just been saying, hey, by the way, I booked something to shoot the first and second.
I see.
This is what my, So then I kind of keep that running email and I might send it to the seven production companies at once and just, you know, BCC everybody. So like, hey, just so you're aware, this is what my week looks like. And then, you know, if anything relevant's coming up, they might be like, oh, by the way, I'm trying to hold some time Wednesday morning with the creative director to pitch. Can we look at this window? And so as things are changing daily, I will specifically update like an EP or whoever. But yeah, if somebody's in bid with me or in conversation, you know, I'm sharing just like a, you know, like, yeah, the seventh job of the month isn't asking me what my call time is tomorrow. But I gave that EP all my information just so he knows, like, if I'm looking for Tom tomorrow at 9 a.m. and he goes dark for 2 hours, well, he's probably on set, you know?
It feels like, Tom, you're just doing a really good job of communicating and flagging things as windows close. I kept thinking, like, when people will reach out and, you know, you've got a busy month or whatever, and they'll say, like, things like, oh, are you available for these dates? The part of me is like, well, technically, yes. Right. And we all know that not all of these are going to line up. And so you say yes to everything because what are the odds, right? We've been spending a lot of time talking about, well, the odds are higher than you think sometimes.
You have these seven jobs, five are already booked. We just thought, let's go through each one real quick, just the shortest version ever of like how you got that job and like what you did to get the job.
The first thing that popped up for the month of May was a cleaning product and it's celebrity talent. They wanted to shoot on May 8th. And so they approached me last month. And then the company was like, hey,
this is a company you worked with before?
This was a production company that I had worked with last year. Yep, it's a production company. And they approached me and they said, hey, we've been putting together this bid. You know, we haven't found a director that has enough of the type of stuff we're looking for with celebrity, comedy, direct to camera. Can you put together a couple quick things and shoot it our way? And so, yeah, I just build.
So what do you put together? How many clips?
Yeah, I build like a secret page on my website that's just like a specific reel. My reasoning there, because I used to do like a Vimeo showcase or like a WireDrive or something. My thought is, hey, if I put my five or six favorite things on a page that's titled the job, then they might like those and be willing to click on the commercial tab or the movie tab or whatever. And just like spend a little bit more time.
It's kind of the same amount of work either way, right?
Like, oh, yeah,
like a Vimeo showcase versus your Squarespace template or whatever, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Now it's pretty automated. I duplicate the page, I change out the videos. And so that way they're spending more time in my storefront and seeing what's on the side and whatever. And so
I love that.
Yeah, they looked at it and said, hey, you're the only director we've seen that has enough of the right, you know, it's just the right little combination.
Can I ask you who the most famous person was in this?
Probably Jennifer Gardner and Ed Helms. I did the end of last year. They're pretty instantly recognizable. Dak Prescott from Cowboys is pretty recognizable. And then moving down the list, yeah, it's like the dude from The Office and, you know, the lady.
So everything you show them has like some recognizable face in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, and so I sent them like six, and then the agency's like, this is great. Can we have these three? And the three that they asked for were like, you know, the Jennifer Gardner, Ed Helms thing, the Harmless Harvest lady from Hacks that Oren's wife's also in, Megan Stalter. They asked for that clip. And then maybe the guy from The Office, maybe those are the three that they're like, hey, these three hit enough of what this. And at this point, I had not had a creative call. I had not seen scripts. I just was asked to show, like direct address, comedy, celebrity. And so,
just to break it down, just so you'd worked with the production company before.
Yep.
But not the brand. They were just like, hey, Tom, we're looking for celeb stuff. What you got?
Yeah, so we're looking like for celeb stuff. Direct to camera, quirky scenarios.
Yeah.
And so, I showed the reel.
A reel that any of the three of us could have put together.
No, in theory, absolutely. A reel that any one of you could have put together. And so, yeah, I mean, one part of it too that helped me out was they also wanted to see vertical video and like social media, like iPhone stuff. And so I also, you know, a couple years back, if I shot that stuff, you know, you might shoot a spot like a 30 and then have like a, have like a vertical 15. I would just like not keep it. I'm like, I don't care about that. And then in the last couple of years, I'm like, who cares? It's 20 megabytes. Like, just put it on a thumb drive. Who gives a rip? And so a job at the end of last year, that was one of them too. So last year at the end of the year, someone said, hey, do you have any vertical celebrity stuff? And I was like, yeah, I do. And I showed my four that I had or whatever. And then I got one for Duolingo with Jonathan Van Ness. And so that was one that
from
was like,
Queer Eye.
Yeah. So it was a big budget project, you know, a decently budgeted project, I should say. Decently budgeted project.
And that was a Sawhorse project.
Yeah, that also wanted to continue going vertical. And so that was something I had this year. And so that was on there too. It was Jonathan Van Ness, Ed Helms, Jen Gardner. And so, yeah, that one, they looked at it and they were like, you're the guy. Do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, let's do it.
A quick takeaway from this is, you know, I think something we kind of preach here. I don't know. We haven't talked about it for a while, but I think we say when you make your website, like put your 15 best things on the things that you want to, the type of work that you want to get.
Yeah.
If you do scripted horror, like why are you putting your like docu-style comedy stuff on there? You like try to create a brand. But when you're making custom reels, like I happen to know that the Jennifer Gardner, Ed Helms thing you shot was like more docu-style, right? And the Harmless Harvest thing was very scripted.
Yeah.
But that... As a director, you create these different collections of your work, right?
Yeah.
Here's celebrities.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Here's vertical video. And here's travel stuff. And here's lifestyle. And like all of us, like all three of us and probably a lot of directors listening to this have, you know, 50 things they've shot and maybe they don't love all of them, but they all kind of touch on a different circle of the Venn diagram. And something I've learned just over the past couple of years is how like making that real and not just showing everyone everything mm-hmm. is just so helpful in saying like, oh yeah, Matt, you know, we need to do a cat thing that takes place on a sidewalk in the suburbs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you send a suburb thing, you send a musical proposal thing, and you send a cat commercial from Russia, and all of a sudden you're the perfect guy to direct this, yeah. you know, singing cat on a sidewalk.
And just to yes and that, Oren, what I love about Tom, your point about rather than sending someone to Vimeo or WireDrive, is that if people are on your website and they're looking at the custom reel with the different celebrities or whatever, and they're curious, they can see the your favorite spots, the best foot forward stuff, because they'll right. they'll hit home. Right. They'll be right. like, oh, what else yeah. has Tom got going on? Right. And yeah. so I think sometimes it's easy. Certainly I'm guilty of, like, when I'm putting together a reel, there's a part of me that's like, well, I just want to put my favorite spots on there. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And like,
yeah.
you know, they'll see your favorite spots. They want to see what's exactly on brief. That's the yeah. point.
And I'll say the one thing I noticed over the years is that when I've taken more control of building my own reels, I've had a higher success rate.
That's very interesting.
No one, it's no one's fault. Like, you know, with companies that I have like a tighter pitching relationship with, I'll give them access to, you know, people will say, I want everything. Keep me updated. I want everything. And so you may send a production company that, you know, that access, and there's 150 things in there. No one is going to know your work closer than, you know, more intimately than you are. And when something lands, they don't want to look through 150 things and pick which three or four to show. Sure. Like, and so I've noticed that, yeah, I may have something that's older or like in a different folder, or, you know, if I break it down for them, like favorites and comedy, celebrity, mm-hmm. food comedy, whatever, they may not dig into like the other folder. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, that's the thing I've noticed, is that there's probably something in my portfolio that looks or speaks or sounds a little bit like another thing. And that'll help me get in. So yeah. So the first one that got on my radar, cleaning brand, celebrity talent, asked about the eighth, put the reel together, got it.
And I think this last one, it's not only a company you've worked with before, but a company that you kept in touch with and sent all of your new work to.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. That particular EP is someone that, like, we're buddies and we text and we phone call and I check in, and like, I genuinely enjoy that friendship. And that's the thing too, is like, this business is, you know, it's so many people you love and that you enjoy the relationships with. And so we genuinely keep up and we're always trying to like win stuff together. And so I don't know if we said this off mic before, if it was something we said at the beginning. In my 10 years of doing commercials, I had never really, really had the return client agency. I would have production companies come back to me, you know, and get me multiple things, but you would finish a job. And this is pre-pandemic. I was, you know, younger and focusing a lot on movies, as we talked about. But you know, you might do a job for a brand and then the thing wraps up. And when it finishes, everyone's like, this was so much fun. This was amazing. We're hiring you for everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
The only person who could have done this job.
Yeah, you saved
us. You really saved this. Yeah. You made this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, which is great. And I think in the moment it's real, but then, you know, it goes to edit and all the things, and it goes to testing and whatever they do. And then like the media buy happens, and then they're like, ooh, that didn't do what we wanted or whatever. Next time we're getting somebody else. And so I never really banked on having that repeat business. I was like, yeah, whatever. Okay. It's something we say, but like, it's not something we do. I take it seriously, because as we talked about, like, I hire the same crew every time. So when I work with DP Brooks and I say, I'm getting you on the next one, I really get him on the next one. And so anyhow, that's a little bit of the story of this month, is that, you know, last year there were several of those jobs and people say, hey, we're getting you on the next one. And then you just don't hear anything, and that's fine. And so coming into this month, May 8th, cleaning product, agency had never worked with before, but the EP and I had a relationship, booked it off my reel. And then the next one that popped up was looking at May 17th was Honey Baked Ham. And that's a company that I shot some commercials for last year. The agency and I really got along. The project last year had different challenges, you know. They mm-hmm. seen something on my reel last year that was like kind of Friday Night Lights-esque with a comedy twist. and they're like, oh my gosh, this guy's got the slow motion Friday Night Lights. I also have some like David Koechner, the guy from Anchorman, direct to camera insurance stuff. And they're like, that's what we want. We want this like ham spokesperson talking to the camera as we're cutting to all this beautiful football footage. And then we reveal it's not a football flying through the air, but a ham.
So and that's so, relationship plus a perfect reel. So then how did you...
And Tom also has like amazing food stuff. Mm, yeah, and what's interesting about that is he, for a pitch, will go and do a photo shoot with food.
You're like honey, we're having honey baked ham tonight.
No, but he'll go, he has strobe lights and a nice camera and he'll go shoot French fries on a table or a pizza slice. Just to show people like, hey, this is I understand how to shoot
That's
food.
Cool. That's cool. So, I am jealous of that because I would love, I'd love to do food and don't have the reel for it at all. I love the idea of just like proving it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Getting out there.
Like, I remember you had a pitch where you're like, yeah, I don't really have any fries on my reel, so I'm just going to go shoot some so I can show them what my fries
look
like.
I love that, Tom. That's that go-get-it attitude.
So yeah, last year I was kind of found because it was like, oh, the right reel and there's moving pieces. And so that job went really well. And they're like, oh my gosh, we love it. We're going to get you on the next one. And so that was the fall of last year. They did shoot one in December. And, you know, I was not picked, approached, anything. Oh, heartbreak. But then, you know, it did whatever it did. And then this year they came back and they were like, actually, you know what? We want to rerun the ads Tom shot last year. But let's also take some money and add to it. Let's keep something in this like football and collegiate sports world. And so that one, we, you know, we got on a creative call. They're like, hey, how's it going? And, you know, I kept up with those guys in the off season and sent them stuff. And I recently watched the Super Bowl and became obsessed with football and been watching all these sports documentaries. And so we were talking about some teams whatever.
Wait, hold on. Did you become obsessed with football because of the last Super Bowl? Is that what you just said?
I think I became obsessed with Super Bowl because of the Taylor Swift saga. My wife, you know, who never asks to watch TV ever, was like, can we watch the Chiefs play today? And I'm like, today's the Super Bowl. You want to watch the Super Bowl? And she's like, yeah, sure. And so then we watched the Super Bowl.
And now you're like, oh, I've been missing football my whole life. And now you're so into it?
Well, then we went on a rabbit hole of like watching a Netflix documentary about Patrick Mahomes and quarterbacks. And then we went on the run of like all this like SEC college football stuff. And so I was discovering that like from like the 2010 to 2012 or 11 window, there was this like Tim Tebow run in the SEC. And I got so invested. And these particular creative directors were in those colleges at those times, at those games. And so I was like, oh my gosh, these guys were at these games where these crazy upsets were happening. And so I was like, guys, you have to give me the scoop. What was that energy? What was it like? And so this year, the spot that they came back to me is all about the hype of the tailgate. And so they were like, we've already been talking to you about this topic. Why don't we shoot something? What could you help us put together? How can you solve some of the problems? Again, those spots have some like, you know, celebrity talent, some celebrity talent that has limited time. And they're saying, we need to do these three things. This person may only have 5 hours or what X amount of hours. What solves can we come up with? And then so you pitch them like, okay, well, why don't we get all the direct a camera address with this character, you know, in two or three setups in the morning, have all that other dialogue playing as VO, get a VO record, and then we'll intercut these like certain things with like a stand-in character or just details of food or flashing lights or whatever it needs to be to like close the gap. And then they're like, we love it. And so that was something that I was like, okay, cool. I'm feeling pretty good about this one. That one's probably going to happen.
Okay. So you got the second one
for the 17.
And that was a previous relationship. But I think obviously the takeaway from this story, and Matt, I'm sure you'll agree, is that you kept in touch with these people, not about like, hey, what other jobs do you have coming up? Or it wasn't just work. You were talking football with them. And like,
yeah.
I found with like a lot of my meetings recently, I'm spending 80% of the time not talking about the work.
Right.
And basically just like
connecting,
mainly talking about potty training.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or like whatever's going on in my life at that moment. And people seem to be like interested. Or today I had a meeting. I talked to some woman about coffee addiction for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the hopes that she will hire me for something in the future.
The thing I like about not just potty training, but Tom, your point was like, oh, you're showing them a thing that you're passionate about. Do you know what I mean? You're a passionate, enthusiastic guy. And so that is a really clear pathway for people accessing what you're going to be great at. Do you know what I mean? If you're like, oh my God, I just had like this incredible conversation with Oren about potty training. It was so insightful. And you've got a Huggies campaign, then there's no selling that needs to be done. They think of Oren for the Huggies spot.
And now you got the job without doing a whole pitch again, which is like, you know, I mean, for me, it's I have like a good year, like a 50% hit rate. So half the time I'm spending trying to get jobs leads to nothing.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't get paid for it or anything. But so far, these two stories, people just were like, hey, Tom, we think you're right. Show us your work. You showed it. You spent, you know, aside from the time you're cultivating the relationship, you spent like an hour kind of showing them why you're right for the job, and then you get it. So what was the third job?
Yeah. So those two kind of popped up on my radar first, and I was like, okay, cool. If I book these two jobs in May, like I'm stoked. I'm really happy. And there was also, as we were talking a little bit about the photo, I had a photo client that had come back and was like, oh, hey, let's hold, you know, it's hold this week and that week of May. And I'm like, oh, cool. If I could do this photo thing the first week of May into the cleaning product, into ham, May's chilling. I'm cool. I don't need to like worry about it. And so then the one that actually came
Are you allowed to say who the photo client was?
Oh yeah. Pizza Hut. That was a freak thing because of last time, earlier in the year, like Oren was saying, I was in the mix for Pizza Hut, to shoot some photo campaign for them for their new product line, and the creative team was like, oh no, we know that you have some photo work, but you know, our new look is this very, very kind of like high contrast pop art looking thing. And so I was like, yeah, I can show you that tomorrow. And so I went to a studio and got a bunch of food products and shot a bunch of stuff and put together a curated portfolio that was specifically the types of shots and color palette that they're looking at, blah blah blah. And so I won the Pizza Hut stuff back in March or whatever that was, April, I don't know. And I shot it. And so then I had those photos done. And the same thing I do at my commercials, I like put together a little PDF of like my new photos. And I sent it to a bunch of people. And they're like, I didn't know you shoot photos. Okay. And, you know, you're kind of like, damn, is it embarrassing that I like sent people my pizza photos? Like, I thought it was cool. But then one producer was like, hey, this is crazy. I didn't know you shot stills. I'm putting a job together. We need to hire someone to do some product photography. And I was like, great. What do you got? And it was bottles, you know, cans. And I was like, yeah, I can shoot some cans. And then like an hour later, they are like, actually the talent is going to give you 20 minutes to shoot two portraits. Could you do that? And I like collected some portraits that I had. And I was like, yeah, I can shoot portraits. And then, a day later, they're like, hey, because all this is coming together, we're looking for someone to direct four spots. We already were in talks with you. So day one would be photo. Day two would be the spots. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so those things are about to come out and who knows. But yeah, so Pizza Hut.
So hold on, just to recap, because I think that's really there's some stuff to take away there. So you didn't have materials. So you decided to go shoot some. You spent a day and shot some. Then you told people about it. And then because you told people about it, they were like, hey, we'll hire you for something else. And then because you were easy to work with and they were already working with you, you were in the building, quote unquote. Yeah. You got brought on for an additional directing
day
job on
directing
top of
day.
That.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah, yeah. And so to back up a little bit, though, for Pizza Hut, Pizza Hut is a company that I've, you know, they've been great to me. And, you know, I think we hit on it when 2020 happened. I became a COVID officer and I got in at the Pizza Hut studio and like COVID safety for, you know, 90 days, right? I was there every day and I was doing things like COVID safety, but then I was also, you know, building pizzas and prepping dough. And I was around the head of marketing for a very long time. And so during the days there, they may have some things they wanted to try out. And so I would shoot some of those stills. They'd be like, oh, we need to see vegetables cut a different way. We need to see crumbs sprinkled on the surface. And I shot a bunch of test shoots for them using the lighting style of 2 years ago, a much softer look. And so that person said, hey, you know, as we're looking for a new person to do this, like, you know, market campaign for the country, we should consider Tom. The creative team said, Tom, we see that you have pizza photos, but it's like the old style. Can you do the new style? And so I went and said, yeah. And so I went and shot a bunch of stuff that was in the new style, got that official campaign. And so, yeah, with those actual campaign, I sent it to a bunch of people. Most people thought like, cool, dude. Didn't know you shot pizzas. Looks like a pizza.
Yeah.
And then one person said, hey, let me hire you to shoot some product. And so,
yeah. Which is the point, right? Like, you know, you never know who's looking for what. But what I love about this is that it's not, I've said this to Oren a bunch of times and he always is furious with me, and he's rightfully so. You know, I'll be like, I just need a little bit of heat. I just want like a new project to send to people or whatever. Right. And this is living proof that like you don't need to book a job in order to show people more work. You just have to create more work. You have to create other things for people to check out. And that could be photos of pizza, or that could be a short film, or that could be a spec, or that could be a VFX video that you did of your kids flying around an apartment or whatever. Like, it doesn't have to literally be the work that you're trying to get to show people different ways that you can be creative or responsive.
I think the one thing, again, I think that's been like helping a little bit is like that, you know, thinking about as like the storefront. Like I think what I actually was doing is I was making that, I think I sent it to Oren. Like I had a private page on my website where it was, you know, where it was like photo. And so you get this private link that had like a bunch of photos and it's a nice little curated album, but still right there next to those photos was my commercials and movies and whatever. So getting to May, the ham thing was going on, the cleaning product was going on, and then the pizzas were circulating for some more photo stuff. And I'm like, cool, that'd be a great May. I'm chilling, not going to worry at all. Like, let's just knock these out. Boom. And then I received a cold email for a job that was an alcohol brand that was like, hey, we have this comedian rapper. We want to do these like funny spots. You know, the talent just signed on. We think your website's really great. Would you be interested in doing it? And I was like, yeah.
Did you find out how they found you?
Yes. And so which is funny is that I like I do with most of
they
the
heard you on this podcast.
No, I had texted Oren. I was like, dude, I got another one. He's like, damn it, man. And Oren, you know, we should say that you're on a nice little tear too. You have like quite a few very well-funded, cool projects in the pipe. At the moment, they were all gray and murky. And so it's like, what's going to happen? But I texted Oren about this thing. I was like, dude, I got this one. He's like, how? And so the next day we were carpooling together to a party and I'm giving him more details. They also reached out to Oren. In Oren's email, they were like, hey, sir, if we were to get someone like you, what's your rate? And that's like a very weird way to, you know, get into something. For me, they were like, hey, here's some funny scripts and some previous work we've done that we think similar to yours. Are you interested? And then I was like, oh, this is funny. And if that was on my reel, I would be kind of excited. And we got into a dialogue. And so that company had found me through an AD that I worked with in 2 or 3 weeks prior, had also just did a thing with them and must have said, hey, you know, they must have asked about comedy directors and I was brought up. And so with that one, we got on a call, we had a chat. We talked about what it wanted to be. We talked about where they were at in the writing phase, how their client and director selection process was going to be. And then they were like, yeah, we'd love to try to make this work.
With me, they're like, what's your rate? And I was like, well, this is kind of normally my rate, but I'm willing to talk. Yep. And they're like, yeah, that's kind of high.
Yeah. High for us. Yeah. Which is to ask, is that me being too accommodating? Because I was like, again, at the moment too, I was like, I got these two other things. This would be a third cool one. This would be one.
No, you know what happened is I primed them at like kind of a higher rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you came in and they're like, this is the rate, which was probably much higher than they would offer.
Right.
Normally, sure. You're like, okay. Yeah. Like, it's not a horrible rate,
love it.
But I brought them up.
You brought
by
them up.
Telling by just setting, giving them a number.
Yeah. And so,
then you got the fruits of that.
And so that's a strategy too of like, you know, I always try to think about like, okay, you know, if it's a new company or a new production company, like,
sure,
it's the lead generation. So it's like, okay, yeah, like maybe let's play it your way and I'll take the lower rate. And you know, I'll go on the journey your way. And then through production, I may suggest like, hey, let's get my DP or let's get my whatever. And then people are like, oh, he really thought about this or you elevated it. And then when the next thing comes around, I'm like, we just got to bid it, you know, whatever. So that thing popped up. And what was interesting about that one is that they came to me and then they're like, hey, so, you know, celebrity talent, blah, blah, blah. That and Ham wanted the same day of the same week. And so I was like, oh, guys, I don't know if I could do this. The other people technically asked first and they award like in two more days. And you guys want to award now. That one worked out because they were like, the talent was flexible and it's like, great. And so as that one was getting negotiated, a company out of New York, production company, said, hey, we saw these boards. They want live action comedy. You know, this is a company that I talked to for about 2 years and we've pitched on stuff and, you know, they've submitted me and we just never heard back, which is the traditional way that it goes. And so they hit me up maybe 3 weeks ago and said, hey, we saw these boards. We'd love to show your work. And I said, yeah, you know, here's a curated reel, like put this first. And
so you put them, you showed them very specific work.
Yeah.
On the board.
They sent me a reel. They were like, we want to show this. And I was like, ooh, I don't know if that's my strongest, you know, again, there's a lot of strategy. I think about like how many 15s do I put in a row between a 30 and how do I keep people, how do I keep them on the carousel, you know? And so I like reworked the reel and said, let's show this one. And then I just didn't hear anything back. And I was like, whatever, it's probably gone. And so then yesterday that EP hit me back up and said, hey, by the way, just confirming your avail. I know you shot me some dates for the other thing, but it looks like it's going to go our way. And I was like, wait, what? Do we have to get on a call? Do I have to write a treatment? And they said, no, they went to your site. You have a lot of stuff. Like they, you know, if all those other brands trust you, they trust you. And so, today he's like, hey, it's going to award, but they might go from 2 shoot days to 3. And so he's like, what would be your days that I can put a calendar together for like tech scout fitting, whatever. And so I like wrote down my days and sent him the picture because I was on another call. And then, yeah, it's like, you know, that one landed. Those four things were feeling pretty good. And then while I was like getting ready to kind of like kick off for the May 8th job, you know, last week, just minding my own business, a client and agency from last year came back in and they're like, hey, took a little bit.
The job that Tom and I did together. By the way.
Yes. A job that Orin and I did together.
You see across all of these jobs, you see versions of repeat business. We see versions of referrals, right? Like brand new business, but it's like, oh, it's a crew member that you connected with. We see straight up cold calls, people just being familiar with your work.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a wonderful mixture of all of the different avenues that, like, you know, everyone kind of always is planning on or hoping for, right? Like you always need it to be that potpourri of all of these different options. But because you've done such a good job of building the storefront, of staying in touch with people, of being easy to work with, like I know you were talking about like, oh, maybe you're too accommodating. The flip side to that, of course, is like, you know, you're easy to work with, so you have a good reputation, right?
Right.
The work is good too. So if you're nice and the work is good, then I don't know what there is to complain about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
also I think that first response is pretty key, right? Where someone's like, hey, Matt, we're looking for some directors for this Cat in the Sidewalk thing. Are you available or interested? You know, I think the instinct is to be like, yeah, I'm available and interested. Let me know more. But I feel like the Tom Morris response is like, I'm definitely available and interested. Here are three spots that speak to cats on sidewalks,
right. Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And it's like kind of like hooking them, like instant, like making their job so easy where they could stop the director search at that point, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what they want, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the, you know, that's what's crazy to me too. When, you know, whenever a scenario arises, I think it happens very often with me with production designers is that, you know, when a production designer is really talented, they get scooped up into TV land, movie land, or like huge commercial land. And so, and I, you know, I don't get to fly a production designer, right? Like people will put up with me being like, I'm bringing Brooks. I'm like, you're getting Brooks. But, you know, you might be going to New York and it's like, okay, cool. I need to find a production designer. And they send you like 12 and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't want to look through 12. And so I could just imagine being a agency producer and being tasked with finding directors to present to your creative team and then being like, we don't want to look at, you know, we don't want to look at 20 people. Like they want to see the thing. And I will say, I know we're wrapping it up here. The one thing I've noticed is that the longevity, you know, the longevity of this, you know, obviously it's ever evolving and the pandemic's changed a lot and whatever, whatever. But I, when I was doing it pre-pandemic and my focus was kind of on my movies and I was looking at commercials as like a side, like, oh, it popped up. How great. Ha ha ha. I wasn't necessarily seeing the business cycles of how often or frequently brands are advertising or how often they were doing things. Mm-hmm. And so I may work with a creative team, like a art director, copywriter, whatever, and we would stay in touch a little bit, but you didn't, I didn't quite realize that, you know, some of those people, they may have pitched 20 things and one finally got bought and then we did it together. And then 2 years might go by where they didn't do another thing. You know, I just thought like, wow, these two people, you know, you realize that the business is oh so fragmented. Like that was something with, you know, working closely with Pizza Hut is like, this company shoots just social photos. This company shoots all print photos. This mm-hmm. company that, you know, shoots all mailers, or this agency creates all this work. And these people do integrations and these people do social and these people do broadcasts and these people, you know, like, oh my gosh, it's so fragmented. So like, if you're kind of staying on just one team's radar, they may do something every year, you know, whatever it might be. And they're you know, they're iterating all the time. And so that's something that I've noticed is that, the one thing I used to think was like, man, I do all this outreach, but I'm just one director with like four new things a year. And if I hit up an EP, they may not be seeing things that fit me. Should I have a stable of like five or six directors that we all have three or four new things a year? And then I'm like, you know, managing in a way. But then I just like widened my reach. I just widened my number of outreach that I do or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just a numbers game. The company that I'm working with this week, tomorrow, I worked with them last October. And so we're almost, what is that, 7 months apart between jobs? And if that was the only person I was relying to get me stuff, it's like, well, that would be very difficult. But as soon as I start thinking of like, okay, this company usually gets me on two or three a year. This company gets me on one. Mm-hmm. This company gets me on four. And then you start to account for like, okay, well, where's new business come from and how frequently, you know, whatever. Start seeing it happen. And so, yeah, I do have a little bit of things to write tonight. One of the pitches that I did one, you know, official treatment for a brand I pitched with last year. I pitched with this company last year. They had me go through a treatment phase. They really liked it. They ultimately went with somebody else. They have another, you know, thing they're doing right now. And I think they felt, you know, I'm obviously reading between the lines, but they sent me the work from last year and it was much different than I had pitched it. And I can tell from what they're asking to have seen in my previous treatment, they were looking for something a little bit more dynamic and edgy. And mm-hmm. so they kind of, you know, were like, oh yeah, you had some good ideas. Like, what do you think about this new one? So anyway, we did a pitch today. They're like, this is great. We love you for it. Can you speak to these two things? So I do have like, yeah, one little like write up to put together tonight for them. And then, that's the other thing, you know, as we were talking about times you got to wake up. Job number seven for the month is pitching, but in partnership with a company that has headquarters in Amsterdam and Colombia. And so, I've been doing the 4 a.m. wake up, mm-hmm. To get on at 4:30. And so they had like four questions that they were asking, like, hey, answer these four questions and how you'd approach them or whatever. And then, if it sounds like it should, then you're our guy. And so those two, you know, here we are at 10 PM after, yeah, countless, you know, location scouts and kickoff calls and pre-pro meetings and wardrobe fittings. I still have 2 hours of writing to do and then get up at 5:30 or 5:45 to be on set by like 6:30. So,
well, and you know, Tom doesn't drink coffee, right?
That's commendable.
Brutal.
That's commendable.
22 years, only water.
I can't wait to have you on in 6 months when you'll have shot 300 commercials in between now and then.
Yeah.
It's truly inspiring. It's very cool.
One thing I want to say too, that it really changed my thinking. You know, I meet a lot of companies and I talk to a lot of people and, you know, for whatever reason, like this last week, like four or five new companies were like, we found you, we want to talk. And I'm like, oh my, like, this is the classic, you know, this is the, I'm too busy. I can't. So like, let's, you know, if you remember to check in a month, like I'd love to, because normally I'd be like, wow, all these people want to talk. But I will say, you know, in my rounds and meeting people, you'll sit down and talk with companies and people will say like, oh my gosh, if you did 3 in a year, 4 in a year, that's a great year. And I'm like, in what planet, you know, how, unless they're all $1 million jobs, like how do you live on 3 or 4 jobs a year? You know, even a $500,000 job, 3 of them, it's like, I don't know how much you're making on that to like live. But I sat down with one EP and he's like, yeah, man, I've had directors doing 20, 30 things in a year. And just like the endless feature. And you're like, that'd be crazy. And so just like opening my thing, you know, I used to limit myself saying like 12 a year would be awesome. So if I booked one for the month, I wasn't looking.
Sure.
And so anyway, that just kind of like changed my mindset of like, people got to shoot stuff every day. And, you know, yeah, people got to shoot stuff every day. And so it's like, how can you not be on set more? So,
yeah. Well, and, you know, I was thinking also about the food thing and your point about like the cycles of business. And there are categories, QSR, like quick serve restaurants, right? Like a Taco Bell.
Oh, yeah.
They shoot, or a Pizza Hut, they shoot a new campaign for the whatever stuffed crust deep fried chalupa gordita or whatever every quarter, right?
Yeah.
And that's like that's broadcast, that's social, that's all of the stuff in between, right? Whereas like sometimes you'll do a campaign like the lottery stuff we would do. We would shoot like basically the year, a year's worth of spots essentially in 2 or 3 days. And that would be like, okay, great. Well, that's done. And hopefully we'll see you in a year, right? But so there's something to specializing in different verticals that also have just a greater demand for work, I think is really interesting.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing I'd say too about the one thing with food that is like, is you know, it's kind of like it's a tough ceiling to break through. But I've noticed like as I've gotten a little bit more, it gets you a little bit more, is that it's very, very hard to like cheat or shoot spec stuff for, you know, like McDonald's hamburger is a McDonald's hamburger. And so to have that product ordered and styled and put together and lit and usually MoCo and like, you're not going to go do that on spec. You can't just order food out of McDonald's and like hope it looks the way it should and like have it hold up for 6 hours of shooting or 10 hours of shooting. And so, you know, I started with some smaller market food brands and then was able to, you know, sneak my way into some bigger brands. And so like last year, for whatever reason, I was able to get Arby's. And that was like, hey, this is a, you know, it was like 3 days to shoot 5 shots, like so comfortable. And it was all motion control and whatever. And then once I had Arby's, like a national broadcast spot in my portfolio with supporting smaller food brands, other, you know, Pizza Hut was like, oh my gosh, you have to shoot the photo stuff. And then still chasing down that TV and video, what, you know, we'll see how that ever shakes out. But that was like, boom. And then, you know, I was able to get Domino's. Domino's was like, hey, we're doing these spots and we want someone that could do live action and food. And like, that's a little bit rarer, I've noticed, is that there's not a lot of people that love doing tabletop and also have live action comedy. And so then it's like, oh, here's some real, you know, here's real Domino's. And then that's going, it's like, here's real Jack in the Box. I don't know. Food is one of those things. Yeah. There's always a deal. There's always something new to sell and you can't fake it. And so once it starts showing up on your reel, then it's like, I've noticed that I've gotten in the conversation more in the last 6 or 7 months. Once I got like the one, you know, and so, you know, yeah, I'm curious to see how that continues to progress. And, yeah, cause a lot of the talking head stuff, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, like you could, there's a lot of different ways to skin that cat, but when brands start talking about their food and the way that it looks, and then that relationship with the food stylist and, you know, whatever it might be, they want to trust that you've actually like been there, you know?
Yeah. Love it. Love it. Well, do you have a few more minutes to endorse?
Yeah. I'm here. Yep.
Unpaid endorsements.
I'm always looking for music to write to.
Oh, great.
So I love like a good film score, you know, I love synthesizers. And so there is a musician, experimental electronic music producer / composer, according to Wikipedia, that's how they're classifying him. But he works under the stage name 10 Tricks Point Never. Like, he worked on like FKA Twigs. He did the soundtrack for Good Time. You know, he's like a pretty fancy dude. I'm sure there's actually much more famous people on here than I'm thinking of. But it's really like sad and avant-garde, but still grounded in like musicality in a way that I really love. If you're looking for something to kind of just like, it's not gonna amp you up necessarily, but it is gonna put you in a mood and a state of mind. 10 Tricks Point Never is my unpaid endorsement.
Okay, Tom, what you get?
It was my twin daughter's third birthday this previous weekend, and we're like, we want to have a cake, and so we're like, let's go small, let's support small business. We've done nothing but cake 10 years in a row, even though they're three. Let's get somebody new. And so we discovered at a neighborhood next to us in Chinatown, there's a brand new bakery called Flowering. And they make not cakes, but cake bars. And so they're pretty good. They're pretty tasty. And so we gave that the whirl for the birthday party. We got an assortment of cakes that they made. And, you know, it's pretty awesome. And I am definitely somebody that, you know, if I'm like, I got to write a bunch of emails and do a bunch of stuff, I'll put that little cake in my mind on the shelf in the fridge, and I'll write all the emails and I'll go to the cake. Little reward for yourself. And so, yeah, Flowering Cake Shop.
I'll give one local endorsement in that same vein, which is, tell me if I've said this one already, but do you know on Tuesdays kids eat free at Burger Lounge on Larchmont in Larchmont Village?
I don't think you've said this before. No, that's cool.
So, yeah, it's like if you order a meal, your kids get a free burger, fries, and ice cream. And all you need to order is a burger. Whoa. And they give you a lot of fries, so I don't even order fries. I'm just eating my kids' fries. Oh, and a drink, too. So, yeah, it's pretty good deal. Really good burger. They have Impossible Burgers, too. Like a pleasant neighborhood, Larchmont Village.
Yeah, it's nice.
But no matter where you live, like if you have kids, Google where do kids eat free different nights of the week? And then you'll get like a list of all the restaurants in your neighborhood that kids eat free. And it's usually you need like one adult per child. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if Tom could show up with his four kids. And just
he's like, kids eat free, baby.
Right. Yeah.
He's like, I'm not eating. Yeah. That's one thing. The more general like realization I've had like literally yesterday was I've been putting these like various DPs and, you know, different crew people like on hold, you know, because basically we show like agency reels and stuff, or we show DP reels to the agency before we like lock on a DP. And I've, you know, my producer was like, okay, we got a second hold on every DP. And I was like, oh, interesting. Four DPs were the second hold on four DPs. And then I talked to my EP and he's like, oh yeah, I don't think I've ever gotten a first hold on a DP. I was like, oh, so is that like just the thing? Like you call some an agent of a cinematographer that you want to work with, and you're like, hey, we would like to hold this cinematographer for the shoot, May 9th. And then the agent basically always says, okay, you have a second hold on it, regardless of what's going on.
I think it's the other way around. I think it's like, well, if you're putting four DPs on hold, then...
But they don't know about each other.
They don't know about each other. No, that's what I'm saying is like, and the two other directors on that job are putting four directors on hold. And then four DPs on hold, then just on one job where one DP gets hired, you've got 12 people on hold. So that's just a lot of people. Like you multiply that across multiple jobs across town, all of a sudden, of course, everybody's, you know, on hold is what I'm saying.
So you think they really are all on second hold?
I think so. But wow, that only one of them is going to get the job. Right.
See, I think that the default, like one of our guys that we have a second hold on, I texted him and I was like, hey, you know, are you around and interested? I want to tell you about this project. And he's like, oh, I'm shooting a pilot in Toronto right now. I don't even like the agent. Not only is it not a second hold, he's not even available for a first hold. He's like shooting a show in Toronto. Like
it's a version of what we were saying, like say yes to everything. Like, but second also, hold, sorry, the first hold came through. Sorry, guys.
But I kind of, yeah, it's like insurance. Like, I kind of feel like maybe that's the move I should make for like when someone's like, hey, can we show your reel for this thing? Are you available on whatever, May 25th? I'll be like, yeah, you can have a second hold on it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
then, yeah. What do you think about that?
I love that. And you've inspired one more endorsement from me. Are you guys familiar? Are you familiar with the TikTok channel? Could be the move. CBTM.
No.
Could be the move.
Could be the move. Look it up, guys. It's great. It's like kind of a young guy who does what I would describe as like short video essays on things that he thinks could be the move, right? And they're kind of like wry versions of like the concept of buying your dad a couple like lottery scratchers when you go to dinner. Could be the move, you know.
Saying nice pick when you have no idea who your team just drafted. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So the TikTok is like, it takes that little idea and then extrapolates on it, explains why it would be fun. And like I said, like the voice is funny and cool. And it as its own channel is really fun. I think you guys would like it. But then also just as the idea of a TikTok channel that is like based around an aesthetic and a vibe rather than a person, right? Like, I don't know the guy who does Could Be the Move. It feels like a YouTube channel or early Twitter. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not that different from Shit My Dad Says, but as a video essay. Right. In a way that's really fun and charming. So, also, I had to double check that it wasn't just a joke. Did you guys hear that Red Lobster is filing for bankruptcy because of the endless shrimp promotion?
Yeah, they lost $11 million on endless shrimp.
One more client will never work for.
Yeah.
I do probably got to jump at this point. Yeah, I'm falling asleep in a dark car.
We got to let you go, buddy. Break a leg on all of your many jobs. Where can people follow you on social media?
Tom Morris Film.
Awesome, buddy. Well, you can check us out at Just Shoot It Pod across all social media, and me at Mr. Matt Enlo.
And I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram. This episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Thanks, Noah. Our producer is Tyler Small, and you're listening to music from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And we'll catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.